Let's bean it up, shall we?
Yeah.
So this is a very exciting moment. Up until now, our topics have been decided by our friend Gareth, who just sent us a list of things to talk about. But since then, or since we've launched the podcast, many listeners have been sending us their topic ideas by email, and we've loaded them all into a high-tech bean machine. What we haven't talked about, what do we do? We've put all the suggestions in. We haven't vetted the suggestions.
Yeah.
What if the thing that it throws up is objectively a poor topic for a podcast?
I think our listeners would, I think they'd forgive us for jettisoning something that's really rum.
I think we struggle through and we just create an absolute dirge.
And get ourselves cancelled.
I think if anything means anything, we have to talk about the topic that comes up, even if it's offensive. We have to, because otherwise we are not three bean salad. What are we? Do you know what I mean? If we are not that, then you know what I mean?
What be us?
And I think we have made a promise.
I feel bad about my craven position.
We've made a promise to the listener that we will discuss randomly whatever topic comes up.
A contract.
It's a contract. We have the power to edit it out if it's a shit one and not tell them. But we're not going to use that power. Or we're certainly not going to tell them we're going to use it. And even if we...
Right. So if we can breach the contract, but we just don't tell anyone about it and hope we get away with it. Is that what you're saying?
That's something we could do. Now, I'm not suggesting we are going to do that. But between the three of us, it's an option.
Did you two both do the same thing that I did, which was to swear a solemn oath on a Bible before we started the podcast that we were doing?
I swore it on an ancient oak tree.
I swore it on the paws of my cat, Bluebell.
Okay, well, with those oaths foremost in our minds, mm-hmm. I'm going to press the generate number button, and this will tell us what this week's topic is. Are you ready?
Okay.
Ready.
Okay, the number has come out, and it corresponds to a topic sent in by someone called Fiona Llewellyn. Thank mm-hmm. you, Fiona. And the topic is bags.
Bags. After Henry's sort of discussion of or mention of the sort of nasty subjects, I mean, people have put all sorts of nasty things into bags in the past, haven't they? You know, and left them in train stations and stuff. That's something. That's my first. My thought is going there first.
What, you're thinking of people that have been murdered, dismembered, and put in sports bags.
I am now. I was thinking of the bag as a weapon.
Oh, like you put a bowling ball in a bag and then hit someone with the bag. Is that what you're thinking of?
All that.
Yeah. I thought you meant like a cartoon granny hits people with a handbag.
I wasn't thinking of any of those things, but I am now thinking all of these things.
Mike, what were you thinking?
So what were you thinking of?
I was thinking of a bomb in a bag. I was thinking of a bomb in a bag. And I was thinking of abandoned bags at train stations. And I was thinking of bags that I've left in train stations that have then been taken away by the bomb squad and destroyed, never to be seen again.
Has that happened to you?
Or probably not. Just put in lost property. I've lost bags. Well, it's more than I've lost bags in train stations and then never seen them again.
And you assume a controlled explosion was...
Yeah, I think this would have been in a time when you would have assumed there would be a highly elite military unit or police unit dispatched to do a controlled explosion in a bunker full of sand somewhere, whereas actually probably just someone just tossed it in the bins around the back and left it over.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? When you're looking at doing a controlled explosion of a bag,
yeah,
you're like, okay, there's a bag here. We can do a controlled explosion. That means we have to get the robot out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a hassle.
Robotization.
And he's a salty little bitch, isn't he, that robot?
Right.
As his AI gets better from day to day.
He's right salty. Yeah.
He's lippy.
We've got to get the robot out. That's a lot. We've got to get the robot handler out. And obviously now we have to have a robot chaperone as well because the robot's got rights. Yeah. So that's really a lot of paperwork.
Yeah. Then the robot can say whatever he likes about Jeffrey's haircut. No one cares about that.
Exactly. So it doesn't cut both ways, apparently.
But as soon as you say something to the robot, you're in real trouble.
So there's that. Secondly, mm-hmm. we've got to transport this bag to the middle of a massive airfield.
Yeah, right. A disused airfield.
Yeah. We have to get reporters with a small van to cover it.
Yeah.
We have to get troops of insurance people, lawyers, St. John's medical people on hand. Yeah, it's a massive... We've got to send a guy in there with two clippers. He's got a family. He'll be sweating. It's going to be very traumatic for him. He's going to have PTSD, even if it goes well.
He's wondering why he's there if they've got the robot out in the first place.
Exactly.
He's saying, God, you at least shouldn't the robot be doing this bit?
Yeah. It's a huge amount of effort and time, right? And then you have to explode the bloody thing, right? So,
and, of course, it might turn out that the bag is, as it turns out, a crime scene and could be just, you know, full of someone's legs, you know, and you shouldn't be blowing it up in the first place.
And then all you've done is you've created leg shrapnel and you've blown it all around the county. It's going to make it a lot harder to investigate what was much more would have been a much more straightforward murder investigation if you hadn't blown up the legs.
Yeah, because you've got a crime scene. You've got a crime scene the size of Berkshire.
But that's what happens when you get two cop squads in conflict, isn't it? We're bomb squad. We've got bomb squad, murder squad. Ah, bloody hell! You know what I mean? Competing over the same ground. Anyway, but so the point I was making was
all right.
You got the bag. You go. We also do a controlled explosion, right? Which has all that effort, time, admin. We've just described. Yep. Or you could literally just have a quick look inside. It's almost certainly just a sandwich. Do you know what I mean? It's almost certainly just a fucking sandwich. Just have a quick look. It's just a sandwich. And then, fine. We don't have to call the bomb squad. The robot can stay indoors.
Give the sandwich to the robot. There's a James Patterson novel in there. Does anyone want that? No. Fine. Well,
that can go to the local charity shop. The sandwich goes to the robot. He can start understanding the concept of sandwich. He can learn.
Someone in the railway office is bound to need a new bag as well. I mean, there's always someone who needs a new bag.
Yeah.
Let's recycle this stuff.
The lawyers, the doctors, John's ambulance can stay. They can all stay at home.
They don't miss the school pickup. Everyone's happy. Yeah.
Well, they can fight over the banana, can't they?
Yeah. They can fight a banana. The half orange club bar. It either goes to the police dog or in the bin.
Don't give it to the dog if it's got chocolate in it, you mad fool. Then you create another incident.
Dead dog you have to do a controlled explosion of.
Exactly. It's the only way to treat a dog that's eating chocolate.
Now go to a controlled explosion of the dog. Because it's it's eating half an orange club bar and we'll go feral if we don't. Then you've got animal rights people on your ass.
Yeah, of course.
Pretty soon you have to control explode the animal rights. You're doing more controlled explosions. They're exponential.
Yeah, and there's going to have to be a state funeral. People in this country, they don't like the death of an innocent dog. They'll be, you'll have to close the streets so that people can line the streets for the funeral march. And it's getting very expensive very quickly.
So millions of people come into central London. One of them leaves their bag on the pavement.
Oh, no.
And it all starts again. Favourite bag in my life that I've come across?
Good question.
My 29th birthday, I went to the pub in Tooting and a man came up to me with a bin bag full of lamb and said, do you want to buy any lamb? And we turned him down. But I often think about that guy walking around pubs with it was literally really like straining at the edges, full bag of lamb.
Bag of meat.
Yeah. Bin bag full of meat.
Was it packeted lamb or was it butcher's lamb? Or a lamb.
It was stolen. It was stolen from the nearby Sainsbury's, so it was still in the Sainsbury's.
It had the Sainsbury's logo. It
had the barcode. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, so it was well packaged. It wasn't just it wasn't loosely wrapped in a piece of newspaper or something like that.
No, it wasn't like a sort of dismembered donkey that he was trying to pass off as lamb.
It wasn't a dripping bag. I was envisaging a dripping bag.
No. He'd obviously just swept the local Sainsbury's and good luck to him.
Yeah, I've been offered ham. I've been offered ham from a bag.
Have you? I don't think I've ever been offered meat from a bag.
Have you not?
What am I doing wrong? Maybe I'm sort of coming across a bit aloof.
I think they look at you, Mike, and they think this bloke's probably too cheap to buy stolen ham. He probably gets his lamb and ham one rung down from us.
Found ham.
Just found.
Road ham.
Just found ham. I think this bloke, he just takes his ham and lamb where he can find it. If it's there, he'll take it. He's not. He was
just opportunistic ham eater.
He would probably see us as a bit hoity-toity.
So they're not offering it because they don't want to cause me offence. They don't think I might be aspirational. They don't think I might want to climb that rung up. They don't want to offend me, or they see you as
someone that just literally, if you fall over a piece of ham, you might eat it. But
I'll eat anything I fall over. Right?
Yeah.
And just hope that occasionally it's going to be ham.
My current position on bags is actually bags are quite important. Well, my bag is quite important to me now. And I won't go anywhere without my bag. Because my basically, as I get older, I find that I have more and more like items that I need on me at all times. I just like having all my. I just like if I know that if I leave the house, I've got all my little bits and bobs that I need if there's a problem.
You're making it sound like your bag might have a tartan pattern and a couple of wheels on the bottom.
It's actually quite a cool leather sort of man bag. But basically, there came a point where my pockets were getting so bulky. It was just getting ridiculous because the amount of stuff I like to have with me. I like to have my chunky wallet. Yeah? Mm. My chunky wallet contains at least 10 different loyalty cards and stuff, so it's chunky.
Yeah.
Obviously, keys, phone, but also now glasses case. Sunglasses and sunglasses case.
Oh.
Bottle of water.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Hankies. Or
hankies?
Not hanky, tissues.
In case you meet some fellow Morris dancers.
You got your accordion as well.
Hankies and basic bell set. Book of Summer Solstice prayers.
Telescopic maypole.
Sinister pig mask. Child and young adult sacrifice kit.
Travel henge.
Full set of three-dimensional tarot sculptures.
Inflatable strawberry stand. Right, so fair play. Yeah, you need a bag.
I need a bag, mate. No, so there's all that stuff. So there's all my.
So there's a functional element to the bag. What about the aesthetics of the bag?
Oh, also, sorry, I haven't finished saying what's in my bag, please.
Go on.
My bag also contains a smaller bag.
Ooh.
Which is a nylon orange polka dot. Supermarket recyclable, reusable bag. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I can go shopping. I can whip it out and I can go shopping. If I see a supermarket, I can just.
Just like that, if you want. Just like that. Who cares, right? Yeah, I'm going to buy some broccoli. Who gives a shit? I'm going to go and.
Fuck it. Fuck it. I'm going to get some cashews and some broccoli florets and some basil. And
2 pints of milk. Lovely.
Two pints of milk and some marge and just see what happens. Do you remember there was a period where, like, it was considered hilarious that there were man bags and that men had bags? And we had to live through about 5 years of jokes about man bags. Do you remember?
Well, the fact that the phrase man bag exists is
I was always very confused by it because I sort of feel like men and bags have existed together for quite a long time. But does it specifically refer to just a little,
I know.
A little sort
the
of
implication sort of is that the implication is that Napoleon fought a war on two fronts and literally never had a bag.
Didn't bring a bag with him.
Well, he was keeping quite a lot, I imagine, in his hat.
That's true. he did. Was that why they had the big hats in those days?
Yeah,
they had the big hats, but also they had it the other way around. They didn't have man bags. They had a bag man.
Oh, they had bag man.
Oh, yeah.
So the man bag was a flipper. They flipped the concept of the bag man.
They flipped it. Yeah, once it became unacceptable to have a bag man, you still needed the bag, but the man is gone. Now you're the man, you need a man bag. Yeah.
So there was a time when it was like, oh, that's a lovely bag man you've got. Yes, he's called Louis. Oh, he's very good.
Oh, he's roomy, isn't he?
He's roomy.
Can you open him?
Louis?
Yes, but the trouble is I have to open him at the top so the stuff at the bottom gets a bit squished and I have to empty it out if I want something. I'd really like one I can open down the side, but thank you very much.
I like the way that slots in on his face, the way that bit slots into the other metal bit and makes a satisfying click.
Lovely clasp.
Lovely clasp. Oh. And his face skin, it's got a nice patina, hasn't it?
But you're right, Henry, there was a period where it was kind of seen on... Well, it was a weird time, wasn't it? It was the David Beckham era where he was deemed to be a kind of metrosexual character and it was very dangerous and very kind of, you know, it was the new man idea where we were no longer masculine and we were kind of wearing sarongs and flip-flops and having a bag and things like that, which looking back is absolutely bonkers because, you know, it was very normal stuff.
It's just a bag.
Do you remember David Beckham's sarong?
I do.
People are obsessed with that sarong.
But he's the kind of guy that he can just sort of do anything, right? I mean, you might get a bit of heat from it, but then you know within 24 hours there's going to be literally millions of people doing the same thing.
Yeah.
I doubt who's ever too troubled by the heat.
People say that, oh, Beckham, he can get away with anything, he looks great. I just think he just does and always has looked like a complete pillock all the time.
But is that because you're a gooner?
Oh, God, no. Let's not go down that road.
Are we going tribal?
No, he's fine. We all did go a bit weird for Beckham, didn't we? Like, there was an art installation that was him asleep. And I remember I went to see that. I remember we were all so, like, mad. I remember,
sorry, what's this? I've missed this entirely. What was this?
It was a video of him sleeping.
It was a video of him sleeping, and it was art. It was at the bloody Tate Gallery.
That passed me by completely. When was
that? You know what? I can't... Noughties? I went and saw that, and I stood in front of it and I actually thought, yeah, this is actually quite good.
What were you thinking?
What was good about it?
Actually, I thought, it's good because he's asleep and he doesn't, and I'm not asleep. I don't know, I can't remember. You can justify anything when you're in an art gallery. You just go, oh, yeah, it's probably because, yeah. That's quite interesting, actually, isn't it? Yeah.
I would like to know what it feels like to have an airbag go off in my face. I wouldn't like to be in a situation where that would be life-saving.
So a leisure airbag.
A leisure, I feel like I would just like to know what that...
It feels like something that could be part of stag do's, couldn't it?
Well, that would be a great stag do enterprise.
Get down the old... get down the old... So you get in a Renault, it's an aerodrome, so you get into a large aerodrome, you get in a Renault.
You've got to make sure no one's blowing anything up while you're there. And then drive into the nearest bollard.
Oh, look, your face, Mike, when it went off in your face.
Oh, it really livened things up. It would freshen you up, I think, as well, probably. If you're at the sort of low ebb stage of a stag do, when you're sort of, you know, you really need to find that second wind, I think that could provide it.
Can it injure you?
Yeah. Like, can it be part of the whiplash story? I don't really know. I don't know much about it.
I think I've had the worry before when you see the little sign written on the steering wheel that says airbags inside.
That they're going to go off at any time.
Yeah. The idea of it accidentally going off would be horrible because that's like the equivalent of a small child whacking a bag of crisps and blowing that up next to your ear. But like times a thousand, isn't it?
Which is, of course, is what the airbag was based on initially, when that saved your father's life.
Saved your father's life.
In Reno, Nevada,
yeah,
back in 1973.
Because he was about to drive into a large orange sort of stone cliff, wasn't he?
It was.
One of the ones they have there growing out of the desert, those big cliffs that just grow out of the desert.
He was just re-spooling a tape cassette.
Yeah.
And not paying attention to what was on the road.
And his son was about to prank him by blowing up a bag of what they call patata chips. And they've got a very low range of flavours. It'll be salty or paprika or cinnamon. So that's all they have. Cinnamon potato chips. So the son was about to whack that, blew it up, and then...
Just at the moment of impact.
Saved his life.
Yeah.
I think people might take issue with the idea that... Americans have got a sort of low... There isn't much variety when it comes to bagged snacks.
But in America, it's like when you go into an American supermarket, the flavours have become so divorced from reality. It's like pink-flavoured puffo cheeses. It's like, like now in purple. And there'll just be a picture of a demented-looking rabbit on the front, just like with like sparkly marshmallows flying out of its mouth. And it's like, now as a foam... You just don't know what the fuck it is.
Now it's an expanding foam.
But they're at least not attempting to even pretend that there's any sort of nutritional value in them whatsoever.
No.
It's not what it's about.
It's just sparklemongers.
Yeah. No.
And the there's a few products they're obsessed with in America. Marshmallow is one. Peanut butter is the other one. And cinnamon, isn't it? It's all peanut butter, cinnamon, marshmallow combinations. That it hasn't quite come over here yet to Britain, that stuff.
What, marshmallows?
What?
Cinnamon?
I suppose when you slow it down, marshmallows, cinnamon and peanut butter have all come over here. I mean, I've got peanut butter in my cupboard right now. I quite like it. I eat it quite a lot. And I like cinnamon as a flavour. And I had some marshmallows about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. But that aside...
It's not a bad point.
It's quite a rigorous argument.
Here's something I've discovered recently.
Mm-hmm.
Snyder's of Hanover.
What's that now?
Is that a gentleman's glove shop?
The family of assassins.
No, I think Snyder's of Hanover is like this. You know how weirdly, you know, normally in life, most of your options for food are laid out in supermarkets and corner shops and stuff. But sometimes in a garage, you'll find a really like sort of unique, quite sort of sophisticated and just like creative new kind of food. Do you ever find that?
Is that where you go to look for them?
Like, my local garage, for some reason, has this thing called Snyder's of Hanover.
What is it?
It's basically pretzel chunks.
Oh, so we are talking the height of sophistication here. Yeah?
Yeah.
So something that's really surprising to find in a garage.
Pretzel chunks soaked in unleaded.
With a tobacco flavouring.
But obviously not diesel.
Oh, no.
Not diesel anymore. Well, not if you're going to eat them in the centre of London.
Yeah, ideally, yeah. So they're electric pretzels.
Yeah, go on. No, they're called Snyder's of Hanover.
Hmm.
And they're pretzel chunks that just feel like they've been deep fried for you know, since the 70s. And they're the most oily, greasy, crunchy and gorgeous snack. And they've got flavours like cheese and jalapeno and ham and mustard and onion.
All three.
Are you thinking they're a potential sponsor for the podcast?
Brought to you by Snyder's of Hanover.
America's pretzel bakery since 1909. That's what it says.
They're American. But Hanover's in Germany.
So it'll be German-American settlers.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So Snyder's jalapeno pretzel pieces are made with Snyder's signature sourdough pretzel base, then broken into chunky bite-sized pieces and coated with one of our irresistible flavours. Bursting with flavour.
Sorry, is it sponsorship question? Have you been sponsored by them? Is it just you that's been sponsored by
them? Are you a Trojan horse of sponsorship? When the topic of bags came up, you were internally thinking, yes, because Snyder's of Hanover are sold in bags, so I can bring them up exactly. Quite seamlessly.
And remember, they're doing a big push on the jalapeno range. Try and say jalapeno. If you say it four times, anything above four times, you get 15 grand per time you say jalapeno.
And try and slip in there. They're also launching a new driver's nose bag.
And if you can get Mike to mention the nose bag, that's even better because it seems more realistic. But just don't tell Ben about the deal. That's between you and Mike. And if you mention jalapeno over 15 times, you get access to the jalapeno-shaped Hanover's blimp, which will be an absolutely brilliant holiday option, especially during lockdown.
Unfortunately, guys, I've got something to tell you, which is that I've also been personally sponsored by the commercial competitor to Schneider's, which is Snoofengrubers of Pennsylvania.
No!
Yeah. They've got a beautiful range of deep-fried pretzels.
Their pretzel chunks are a little bit dry for my liking. And that's why I always go with a Snyder's of Hanover.
I mean, if you like it, you know, so much grease that you can't touch anything for hours afterwards, sure, go for a Snyder's of Hanover. But if you just want flavour and convenience, then maybe go for a Snoofengrubers.
I wonder if it's time for me to confess that I have got a sponsorship deal with Herbert du Loir and their wet pretzels.
Wetzels.
Wetzels, which are very difficult, very slippery. Slippery, but full of flavour. And they go straight through you. Absolutely straight through.
It is true, though, that Snyder's are incredibly greasy. Ben, that is true.
You've got to be careful what you say, because that's, you know, we don't want to slander the good name of a company on our podcast.
No, that's why I said incredibly greasy. It's amazing. You can see your own reflection in your fingers. It's ruddy great. No, but my weirdly, my garage, it'll just sometimes it'll have. Well, I think to me, Ritter Sport falls into this category, which is you're in quite a low end shop like a garage, and then you'll look and they'll be like Ritter Sport, the most sophisticated European choco hazelnut snack. Enjoy it while skiing or having a fondue, or
putting 30 litres of unleaded into your car.
Do you know what I mean? It's quite a sophisticated snack, but it's in a garage.
It is sophisticated. Ritter Sport is very sophisticated, yeah.
Also, my garage has got a biscuit I've never seen anywhere else. This biscuit is, it's called Bounty, so it's related to the Bounty bar. It's got the Bounty, it's got the Bounty livery. Yeah. It's got the Bounty font. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got the aspirational coconut halves, the Caribbean horizon.
Yep.
So it's got all that vibe to it.
You're not just buying a snack, you're buying a lifestyle choice.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's Bounty biscuits, soft. So it's Bounty soft cookie biscuits or something it's called. And they're basically cookies that are coconutty.
Bounty biscuits, soft cookie biscuits.
I can't remember exactly what they cook.
I'm guessing it's quite a soft biscuit.
It's a really soft biscuit. It's like uncooked cookie dough, Bounty. It's got so many things going on. It's like this coconutty biscuit, which isn't cooked, so it's floppy and coconutty. It's absolutely disgusting. But it's only available in my garage.
Are you sure it's a garage? It's not a delicatessen.
I remember having that when I went travelling. I had this a special kind of bag, right, which was a sort of anti-mugging bag. It was basically
Was it the flat bum bag?
It was a flat fabric container.
Was it
just big enough to cram full of travellers' checks, which is what it was full of. It was full of travellers' checks and my passport. Yeah.
My dad bought me one of them when I went interrailing at the end of my first year of university. He insisted that I took it with me for my documents and travellers' checks.
Yeah, yeah. Documents. They're really hideous. They're skin coloured. They flesh coloured.
Flesh coloured.
You strap them onto your body, right? You then, bearing in mind you're a teenager, you're quite smelly anyway, and you're walking. I was going around Southeast Asia, so really hot, sweaty countries.
With a big backpack at all times as well.
Impossible to access unless you're back in your hotel room. And also, gradually, your traveller's checks and your documents and passport became more and more smelly. Because they were just sopping wet.
It's true.
Those were a terrible, terrible thing.
It's proper back of watch type stink. Yeah, it's nasty.
But I then substituted that for an external bum bag. For like an external equivalent, which I wore around the front when I went travelling.
As a decoy?
Yeah, it was a double bluff decoy because it did actually contain all my documents and money. And I wore that when I went to Mexico City.
I never saw it again.
Well, I got it nicked off me in a mugging on the tube.
Did you? What kind of mugging are we talking? Was there weaponry? Was it just threat? I think I would be very easy to mug. I think if someone just said, this is, you're being mugged, give it the stuff, I think I would cave quite quickly.
Yeah, I know, I would totally cave. Although, actually, I did find depths I didn't know I had during that mugging. Because
depths of fear?
Depths of fear. Depths of cowardice.
Depths of scream.
You found your inner poltroon on the highways and byways of Mexico.
No, because what happened was, it was actually during the rush hour, so it was a packed train. Mm. And what happened was, I gradually became aware that people were pressing up against me a bit more than was normal, even though we were all crammed in on this train. I was standing, and I noticed there was basically three really big sort of blokes, like, but quite young faced big boys.
young faced like big boys. I'm with you. No, this, you're painting a picture. I've got it. Young faced like big boys. Yeah,
they were young. You know, you could in my memory, they were wearing big shorts. They were big boys.
I can imagine a big young man. Yeah, I think I can do that. I don't think you have to help me too much with this stage of it.
But Mike, only his face is young.
Okay. But below the neck, the three, they're quite, okay.
No, they were like, if you were, you know, you'd go, oh, these are my big healthy lads. You can imagine their grandmother would have been, oh, my big healthy boys. Look at them with their big shorts, big heads. And they were pressing up against me.
Mm.
And they... And they were pressing up against me. And then I just gradually became aware they were pulling at me. They were pulling, trying to pull stuff out of my pockets and trying to pull stuff out of my external front-loaded bum bag, which was just sat there in front just saying, here's all my expensive items and stuff that matters. And so they had their hands in it and I was pulling it back, and I started swearing. Turns out that's what I do when I'm under extreme stress.
In Spanish?
In perfect Mexican Spanish.
I'm embarrassed to say that I was swearing in English. I'm absolutely cringe looking back. Classic Brits abroad, not even swearing in the local tongue.
How did they react to your swearing?
They ignored. They carried on pulling out my stuff. But all the other people in the train were just reading their newspapers, and just all the commuters were just like, oh, it's another guy getting mugged. No one cared. And then I swore and swore and swore, and I pulled and pulled, and they got away with my passport and cards and money. And to this day, I've not travelled on a Mexican train or been back to Mexico.
And did they use your passport to steal your identity, move into your family home in Islington?
That's right.
You got back, and then there was just these three large... Mexican boys who had...
Yeah.
One of whom had accepted your university place.
That's right.
Or was now studying English literature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And...
the other joined your five-a-side squad.
They've just become fully integrated into the family now. unlike me, I'm still an outcast. Sometimes at Christmas and stuff, for example, I'll just hide in the front garden and look through the windows and see the three Mexican brothers.
The three Henrys.
Enrique, and Enrique. Getting given the contemporary novels and things that should have been for me.
So that was Bags. Bags done. Never again when we talk about bags. Thanks to Fiona for sending in that topic of bags. And thanks to everyone else who sent in their topics. They're all in the bean machine, ready to be randomly chosen going forward. If you want to send us any, send them to 3beansaladpod@gmail.com. Now, we've also had a lot of other...
So do a quick explain how the bean machine works. So we get each idea
yeah.
printed, well, embossed onto a Perspex bean. And they're in a large vat. And then the bean machine, it refers to the claw, the metal claw.
Yeah.
Which Mike operates with a series of, it's a mixture of pumps, gears, yeah. and pedals.
Yeah. And meanwhile, you're on a sort of adapted bicycle that generates the mini cyclone within the...
Exactly. Which gets the beans flying round and round.
Yeah.
And so, and then...
It's a shame we can never show the listeners that.
Yeah, because it's pretty...
It's all top secret technology.
It's a pretty extraordinary thing. It's all sort of... don't want to go into too much detail, but it's basically to do with you heat up water in a confined space, creates steam energy, which pumps up, and that gets the pistons going up and down, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And that generates the power to...
Yeah, pretty advanced. It's steam-powered.
But the word isn't legible at that point. That beam, when selected, then has to be consumed by Ben, who then has to sort of digest the outer layer off until
That's
it
right.
can reveal...
And while Ben's arse has been adapted in such a way that the it's embossed, it's raised lettering on the beans as they pass through his lower colon.
He's got a sort of braille reading lower colon.
He's got a rotating braille reader down his colon, which plays a tune as it goes through the teeth. If the teeth on the reader and the teeth and the notches on the bean click into each other, it plays a tune as it spins.
We then decode that tune.
We decode the tune.
Yeah.
I just want to add, it's hugely painful for me. Absolutely.
Yeah, there's a lot of crying. And actually makes it quite hard to hear the tune because of all the wailing. It's going to be wailing quite a lot.
Yeah, well, normally I'm having to bite down on a wooden spoon to get through it.
And we've got through five spoons. Luckily, you can buy 20.
Buy a pack of 20 for the price of 18, yeah.
Thank God.
But that's all tax deductible, so don't want the listeners to worry about that too much.
No. But yeah, you have to put your ear right next to my anus just to hear the very faint song.
Yeah, and you've got one of those old-fashioned sort of splayed, gramophone speakers attached to it now, which has helped a bit volume-wise.
But the song is always Frère Jacques.
But there's one bum note, because our little joke,
One bum note, which...
That's the code.
Yes, a little... One bum note is a little reference to the fact that...
A little bit of... You've got to have a bit of fun when you're doing it, because if one of you's howling in agony, yeah.
Exactly, it's a little bit of fun. I like to think it takes the edge off of them.
Well, I think I laugh looking back. You know, at the time, I'm not...
Yeah.
You know, but in hindsight, I think, a bum note, that's...
Yeah. But of course, there's not much room, is there, for hindsight in terms of, because the preparations you have to...
Oh, the process takes all week.
Yeah, so he's probably, it's several days, isn't it, of you have to swallow all the different components of the...
Yeah, and you can now receive no nutrients through your digestive tracts. It also has to, that's completely parenteral, has to go in just through the vein, very expensive bags of,
Well, that goes direct into my lumbar region now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that the thing is, as we get to the end of this podcast... While I'm enjoying talking to you two, also at the same time, I'm thinking, well, as soon as we press stop on the recording, I have to start the process. So,
yeah.
You know, there's that feeling of trepidation that's building throughout this last section.
But you've never looked better on it.
Oh, thanks.
It's true. Weirdly, it does make your skin look amazing, the whole thing.
Yeah. My top half looks great. Yeah. If you look at the back end, it's quite shot already. Yeah. And we've only done 1 week with the beam machine.
It's almost like the whole lower body just withered into a kind of tail, isn't it? Stringy tail.
Sort of mucus covered tail.
Yeah. And what has it going with the two nurses now that you've got 24/7?
Jackie and Shirley.
Because I heard they were bullying you as well. Is that true?
Yeah. They were taking the piss out of my mucus mucousy tail. And
well, that's the trouble. When you've got live-in medical staff, then things get tense quite quickly, I think.
It almost always goes that way. But anyway, so that's the process anyway, just so you guys know.
Yes.
That's how we get the ideas.
Digestive tract talk.
What seems to happen, we've clicked into a bit of a groove where we will say things on the podcast and then people will get quite angry and correct us about what we said. And I quite like it as a dynamic, to be honest, when it comes to correspondence. We had a lot of correspondence on this one topic, but I'm going to read you the email from Dan Trelfer because he seems the most angry about it.
Okay.
It's quite a long email, so I'm going to shorten it a bit, but he's writing about the fact that Henry, I think, said that Cary Grant, you never see him run, you just see him sitting or standing.
Yeah.
Okay. Please, for the love of God, can I point you to Alfred Hitchcock's North by Northwest? It's in this film that Grant gets terrifyingly strafed by a biplane in a cornfield, during which he runs a lot and throws himself into dust on a number of occasions as he almost dies before being hit by a truck and then running off when the plane crashes into a truck and explodes. I don't want to get angry, Beans, but this is one of the most famous scenes in cinema history.
Okay.
It has been studied and dissected and celebrated for over half a bloody century. I'll say it. The very least anyone should do before starting a podcast on any subject is to have a quick crash course on cinema history, grab some popcorn, watch a few classics, do the work, all of you.
Okay.
Not to go on about it, but the idea Grant was just some kind of sitting standing actor is particularly unfair, given he was in fact a fully trained and rather excellent acrobat. Cinema has rarely seen an actor more able to meet the physical demands filmmaking exerts on a leading man. Have you seen another Hitchcock classic, To Catch a Thief, where he's a brilliant lithe cat burglar, or Monkey Business, where he does all kinds of physical comedy, including roller skating with Marilyn Monroe? Clearly not.
So Henry was half right.
Yes, I still think
we can agree. He does sometimes stand or just sit, and but sometimes doesn't. So he's half right.
Sometimes he's running away from a biplane or being an acrobat.
Yeah, exactly.
I would say, what's the emailer called?
Dan.
What I'd say to Dan is, just go back and have another look at those films. What you'll find is a lot of the time, Cary Grant will seem as if he's running, but if you look carefully, you'll see that what's happening is he's standing. It's a mid-shot. He's actually standing. The camera's jiggling up and down. Yeah. And there's a fake picture of a biplane behind him. So he's not actually in the field. There's not a biplane. That's separate. He's just standing, and the camera's being jiggled. I think that is.
And he didn't
jump
into a cornfield, did they? They threw a cornfield at him. He was standing.
That's right. Yeah.
I see. Well, I'll take that, Dan.
But not everyone's quite as au fait with cinema history.
And I believe in the roller skating scene that he refers to, I believe...
With Marilyn Monroe.
With Marilyn Monroe. That was... this is how they did things in the old days. That I believe he was standing in a pair of static roller skates that were actually drilled into the ground using... platinum rods. They were very, very, very incredibly fixed. You couldn't move those things. You need a tank to move those things. And the set of the roller disco area and the San Francisco cityscape, etc., was built onto a huge rotating...
it was just moved on caterpillar tracks.
Yeah, caterpillar tracks. And it rotated round. He stayed still. Everything else moved around him.
Yeah.
It's basically the same technology they use in cartoons where the characters walking on the spot, but the background's moving.
Yeah, which was filmed in exactly the same geographical location as the North by Northwest scene. He literally actually didn't move an inch for about 12 years.
On the topic of Cary Grant, we also had a lot of tweets and emails that were kind of taking issue with our characterization of him as not being particularly good looking or kind of muscly. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of kind of very thirsty photographs of him, you know, in a short-sleeved shirt or a vest, and just women sort of saying, you know, here you go. He is a fine-looking man. And I just want to say, I don't think we were saying he wasn't fine-looking. No. We're just saying he wasn't the kind of... I think, as Mike said, he doesn't have the muscle tits that we expect these days.
He doesn't fit the current Hollywood expectation of the A-lister physique. Oh, he was a handsome devil.
Also, a lot of people were a little bit angry that we said that Cary Grant was in a film called Roman Holiday, when in fact that was Gregory Peck. Great name for a rear, Gregory Peck.
Again, it's very hard to prove these things one way or the other. But, you know, I respect that opinion, certainly.
Are you going to agree to disagree, Henry?
Look, we've all got a view on it. Your view is that it was Gregory Peck. Our view is that it was Cary Grant. Let's respect each other. And now it's time for Pompidou section. Pompidou.
On a different topic, Lauren Briscoe got in touch. She says, after listening to your podcast and enjoying the additions of the Pompidou section and digestive tract talk, which, may I add, hasn't come back for two episodes now.
We did talk about digestive tracts a little bit earlier on, and that could be retrospectively. We are now Pompidouing as well, aren't we? We could.
Yeah, so both of those could get a little...
This is the trouble with these topics. Whenever they come up, they automatically Pompidou yourself, doesn't it?
As soon as you think Pompidou, you're Pompidouing, yep.
Lauren writes, I wonder why yet we don't have a jingle for talks about flightless birds. I think it would be a great addition, and as it is a reoccurring theme, yet I have no musical talent or knowledge. The most I can do is play Seven Nation Army on the keyboard. Mm-hmm. I propose that Mike suggests one genre, while Henry picks another, and Benjamin can mash the two, creating a great melody.
It's a very strong suggestion.
It's a mashup. Love it.
So we got this email earlier in the week, and I did ask both Henry and Mike for a genre to create a new Flightless Bird jingle. Mike, you said...
Bossa Nova.
Henry went for...
Early Dylan.
Bob Dylan.
Well, I didn't specify.
Okay, Dylan Thomas. Oh, no. And I made one. Okay, here we go. You should be able to hear this. Okay. This is the Flightless Bird jingle.
Welcome to the Flightless Bird Zone.
No, please, not my face!
There you go.
It's another humdinger, Ben.
That was really good.
So this is it. We're now in the Flightless Bird Zone. Last week, I mean, this has been an ongoing story. How dangerous comparatively is a rear, is a cassowary?
So you don't know when you're going to take the lid off something that it's really going to...
It's really connected, hasn't it, the flightless bird stuff?
It has, hasn't it?
In last week's show, Henry put a call out to any ornithologists listening for them to explain why flightless birds have long, sexy legs. I myself then tried to give my own explanation based on nothing more than a hunch, which has been proven to be wrong. And I'm very happy to be proven wrong
I remember, Ben, thinking... I remember when you said that your theory, I remember thinking, even for a non-ornithologist, this sounds like tripe.
Well, Letitia's been in touch. She describes herself as a hobby ornithologist. So, you know, let's take what she says with a pinch of salt.
It's a good few rungs above us, isn't it?
But yeah, absolutely, absolutely. She says, most flightless birds, or struthioniforms... i.e. the ostrich, rhea, or cassowary, are known to have lived in areas where their natural predators were so rare that they didn't have to escape by flying anymore.
So they could lounge around and sort of lounge around in sexy bars, just enjoying their own legs.
So they were lounging so much their legs stretched as they were putting them on coffee tables and poofs. They needed to develop the long legs to be able to do that.
Well, Letitia says they passed the ability not to fly onto generations after them. However, as new predators suddenly came along, i.e. humans, they had to develop new techniques since their best defense was rendered utterly useless by then because they couldn't fly. For example, the dodo didn't develop a new technique, and look where it got it. The new defenses...
And also, it doesn't have sexy legs, doesn't have sexy eyelashes.
And so it absolutely deserved to be wiped out.
It's absolutely deserved.
The new defenses included moves like running quickly or kicking. Thus, the legs and leg bones overdeveloped into the sexy legs we know today. Hope I could help, Letitia. So there you go.
Well.
Thank you.
So it's good to know that humankind has had a hand in getting those legs nice and long and sexy.
It's one of the few few improvements we've made, perhaps, to the natural kingdom.
We also had a few tweets and emails along the, I'm not going to read them out, but there were lots along the lines that we were being quite sort of short-sighted in our view of what a sexy leg is when it comes to a bird. And then actually a sort of shorter, stumpier leg can still be sexy.
Oh, God.
You know, but I think what we were trying to say was that they're sort of sexy in a kind of stereotypical Jessica Rabbit kind of way.
Well, yes. We're using a 1980s film paradigm as well.
with respect to all other sorts of legs are available.
Yeah. And I actually want to go as far as to say, I personally don't find any birds sexually attractive. Just want to put that out there.
It's too late for that kind of backtracking.
It's way too late.
I wouldn't shame anyone who does, but I personally, they're not for me in a sexual way.
Also, I know for a fact that you went out with a raven at university.
Yeah, but that put me off. I got burned. That raven treated me like shit.
He kept telling you he could get you free tickets to the Tower of London. Never came good.
Never came through. Then I had that long relationship with the beef eater again. Should have just paid the £19.
And then the beef eater ended up with the raven, didn't they? And to be fair, they should have been together from the start. Because
well, that's true. That's it.
They both work in the same place, building. They both...
They're not actually allowed to fraternise outside of work, though. That's the problem. It was a forbidden relationship.
No further than the gift shop.
And they were both beheaded when it was discovered on the lawn.
I remember that.
Amy Hunt gets in touch. Mm-hmm. So Amy Hunt is an accredited, this is her word, accredited extinct flightless birdologist.
Fantastic.
She says, I heard from your podcast that you're interested in hearing about birds who are a confusing mix of scary and sexy. Well, boys, you're in for a treat.
Okay.
I have written you a short history of the elephant bird.
What?
Now, the email she sent was very, very long, so I'm just going to do a précis. So I'm going to read a few paragraphs. Whilst rheas and cassowaries might rip out your guts, elephant birds just went straight for the brain. And then she sends a picture. Here is a historical sketch of an elephant bird attack. We can see in the picture that the elephant bird is using its strong and alluring feet to scalp the man and stir up his brain whilst on the move.
Like porridge.
Stir up his brain.
Like breakfast porridge.
with as much ease as we might rip off a yogurt pot lid and mix it with our spoon.
And does it also, do you reckon it also had the attendant worry of a bit of brain spurting across the room and hitting your sort of partner in the face?
Did it always wear an apron?
What you want to get is a human that's got a kind of fruit corner head where there's a little bit on the side you can mix in with the main brain.
Crunchy sweet biscuit.
Compote. She goes on to write, now, unfortunately, elephant birds are extinct. And of course, it is because of humans. One frightening fact about elephant birds is that one day they might be up for de-extinction / genetic resurrection.
What?
Scientists managed to extract DNA from the remains of their eggshells, providing them with enough genetic material to potentially bring them back in the future when the technology is ready.
Don't do it. It's not good. It's a bad idea. Don't resurrect the elephant bird.
I don't know. Well, can we keep it in the back pocket for the zombie apocalypse? Because they sound ideal. They sound like an ideal animal of warfare.
What, to deploy against the zombies?
For the brain scooping, right? Remove the head or destroy the brain.
Oh, yeah. What could go wrong, Mike? We're just going to bring back an extinct species of bird to use as a military technology. Oh, yeah. That's going to go well.
I think it'll be fine. It'll be fine. Activate.
Amy says, I think reintroduction of them into the world would end in a complete shit show. That's her words. So, and she knows. Wow. On top of that, we had an email, a one-line email from a man called Blair Perry saying, An ostrich bit my nipple last year.
Wow.
End email.
Last year, eh?
Well, it was a rough old year.
It was a rough year, wasn't it? An ostrich bit my nipple.
I really, I mean, I want to know the sequence of events that culminated in.
Well, the implication is that he's got one central nipple.
Is it?
No. if you said a cat bit my arm last year, you wouldn't think I only had one arm.
One central arm.
I would imagine he means an ostrich bit one of my two nipples last year.
Okay, yeah. He's not specifying which nipple or which point in the year it was at all.
So he's generally quite vague for economy of language in the whole message.
Yeah, I'm going to guess left nipple, Christmas Day.
Because the ostrich wasn't fully cooked when it came out of the oven.
I'm going right nipple, the Ides of March.
Also, there's something I've noticed from the emails, Henry. This is your fault.
Oh, sorry.
In the first episode, you went on a bit of a strange rant about how if someone writes a long email, it means they're mad and you don't like receiving a long email.
Oh, really?
And I would say that at least 40% of the emails we receive say, I'll keep this short so as not to anger Henry. And I think it's probably having a dampening effect on the kind of correspondence we're receiving.
Oh, sorry about that, but I still think it's better to
keep... stand by it?
I do stand by it. It's better to keep it short because you don't want to come across as mad.
Also, I'm sorry to say, boys, that we received a tweet that has slightly driven a cart and horses through this entire section.
Oh,
are you ready?
Okay.
Susan Turnbull sent a tweet saying, "Dear Beans, the secretary bird is not flightless."
What?
So it must be discounted. So when that came in, I thought, okay, maybe it can fly. You know, like how a chicken can fly? Yeah. You know, it can kind of
in
go...
In theory.
It can sort of get onto a small...
With the wings of faith.
Perch or what have you.
Yeah.
I looked into it a little bit closer, and on their Wikipedia it says, secretary birds soar and rise up to 3,800 metres above the ground.
No, this is Cary Grant, Gregory Peck all over again. You know,
3,000 metres? That's space, isn't it? 3,000 metres?
It says they use thermals to rise to up to 3,800 metres.
In under 5 seconds.
So, yeah, they're absolutely not flightless in any fashion. But they do, to be fair to us, it does spend most of its life on the ground, apparently.
Someone tweeted about a bird here, Anna Jones. Have you seen this one?
No.
And she's tweeted a photo of a bird called a red-legged seriama. And it's attacking a snake, but I think a real snake, I think. It's extraordinary. And it says, red-legged seriamas are known for vigorously and repeatedly tossing their prey against rocks to break the prey's bones and then shredding it using sickle claws.
Ooh, sickle claws.
Shredding.
These birds are considered the closest living relatives of a group of gigantic carnivorous terror birds, which once roamed the Americas.
I bet they did.
Wow.
Ruddy hell. Terror birds. I once had a bird stuck in my bedroom.
Terror bird.
And I was... it wasn't a terror...
Did it shred you with its claws?
It was an ordinary... I think it was just an ordinary dark brown bird.
Oh, yeah, I know. Just a regular bird.
It was like a regular dark brown bird. And it was weird because at the time, I was in my 30s, but I was living at home. I'd moved back in with my parents. Because I didn't have any strictly speaking job prospects. And I was going through a phase of living with my parents. I woke up one morning on the weekend and there was a weird noise coming from the window area. And what had happened was this dark brown bird, right, had come into the... It basically... It was a sash window. If you can imagine, one of the sashes was down a bit, or the top half of the window was a bit down, so there was a gap at the top, and the bird kind of got trapped in between the two overlapping bits of window. Does that make sense? And I looked at it, and it was scratching at the glass with its claws, and it terrified me more than just pretty much anything I've ever seen in real life.
What was more frightening to you at the time, the bird or your complete lack of career prospects?
Well, Ben,
this presumably would have been a bird that's about the size and weight of a plum, right?
Yeah. But what happens is that a bird, once a bird goes indoors, a bird gets transformed from a cute thing which raises the spirits of pensioners and which in watercolor form will proudly bestride greetings cards for all occasions. Yeah? That's what a bird is when it's outdoors. It's nibbling some nuts in your granddad's garden. His mood's improved. Yeah? As soon as they come indoors, a bird transforms into this. I looked into its eyes. It was the dead eyes of primal horror. It was the eyes of Darwinism, nature, just red in tooth and claw, just survive. And it was scratching on glass. So I could see perfectly. Do you understand, Mike? That would be like...
I do understand. Were, all in the childhood bedroom of a 34-year-old man.
Exactly. But it was like... You tell you what it was like. It was like Hannibal Lecter. The genius of that film, Silence of the Lambs, was get the horror guy and put him behind glass. Apparently there's nothing between you and him. Same with the small dark brown bird. It was scratching away at the glass, but I could see it perfectly because it was just glass between me and scratching. So what I did was I hid under my duvet, hoping that an hour or two, the bird would leave.
It was trapped though.
I know, but it was trapped. But, you know, Hannibal Lecter got out.
Through like a web of...
Yeah, but your bird's not in a position to make a deal with the FBI that he then reneges upon.
And also, that the last thing that bird was going to do would be to take my face off, put my face on. And then I hope to be transported by the RSPCA back to a bird hospital, only for it to take off... No. No, my face. What? to be taken to hospital and then... And the bird pulls my face off. Like, it's the bloody bird. It's the dark brown bird. It's too late. It's flown out of the ambulance.
With a man's face.
With a man's face. And meanwhile, I have got...
So he's swapped faces. He hasn't done the full legs. He's just completely... You're a man who already had very low job prospects, but has now got to walk around with the face of a sparrow.
I tell you what, graduate with sparrow face, Nick, not something you read a lot in the jobs pages of the Evening Standard at the time. So basically, a few hours later, I'm still under the duvet. I haven't heard anything for a while. I peek out and the bird's still there and it starts scratching again and it's freaking me out. So I ran out of the room and ran downstairs to ask my dad if he could help.
That must have been a sad moment for him. Because I think both of your older brothers are doing quite well by this point.
Yeah. There was... Because basically I couldn't go in that room with the bird in there. The bird, it was freaking me out on a level that's so weird. It was just, I couldn't deal with the dread of the bird. As a mixture of pity and fear as well, because obviously I felt sorry for the bird, but that made it all the more horrifying that the bird was in a bad situation as well. But anyway, but so my dad went into the room, there was no sign of the bird. I was like, oh, thank God, the bird's just gone. I don't know, the bird somehow managed to free itself and has left. And then I was really relieved. And then I walked down the stairs to go to the loo. And under the chair outside the loo, there was a small dark brown bird. Now, look, it didn't take much to put two and two together and to realise that was the bird. And the bird had somehow got into my room and gone down the stairs and was hiding under the chair outside the loo.
Have you got like a waiting room area outside your toilet?
There's just magazines, just some music playing.
Did you live in a dentist's office?
Why is there a chair outside the loo? I never sat on that chair. And the only thing that chair's ever been good for, frankly, is for a small dark brown bird to hide under.
That's why it was attracted to your property, Henry.
Could be. I think my dad then was able to cup the bird in his hands in a way that you're supposed to be able to do, gently take it outside and release it, whispering something sort of inspiring.
Sorry about that prick. He's my youngest son, but he's all right, really. He's going through a rough time.
He's unemployed.
We spent quite a lot of money on it, on his education, but well, you know, we just, what did we do wrong? You know, we blame ourselves, but obviously you can't. But look, just fly, take to the wind, gentle bird, and
don't have children. Don't have that third egg.
Don't. Just two eggs is loads. What's wrong? You're fine. You're fine with two eggs. And if you have got a third one, just no one will know. Just knock it out the end. Knock it out.
Just feed it to a snake.
Just feed it to a snake. And if I could do that with my third-born son, now I would. But you can't.
Do you know any snakes?
We don't have big enough snakes in the UK.
I hoped on his gap year in Central America that he might come across a boa constrictor or something, but no, he didn't.
I encouraged him to take long naps under trees.
I filled his document pouch with meat.
Still, at least we've got the three Enriques. That's some comfort.
Yeah. It was a difficult time, but that happened. And then not just over 2 years later, I did actually move out. So goes to show that maybe it was a sign. I think I took it as a sign to probably just knuckle down, really, really just settle in properly with the parents for another couple of years. And if it wasn't for that bird, who knows what I might have done. Might have moved out and really gone for it.
If you're listening and you have successfully cupped a bird in your hand and taken it to freedom, do get in touch.
And what did you quietly whisper into its ear before releasing it?
Right then.
We welcome your emails.
Yes, please.
threebeansaladpod@gmail.com. Do get in touch. We're also on Twitter. There was talk of starting an Instagram, but we haven't done that yet.
Yes, we will.
We will launch it at some point, but until then.
Ta for listening.
Bye.